jazz. You're my dream come true, and all that jazz. Baby, you're too much. You got the skin I love to touch. The skin I love to touch.
Oh, that's a good piece of music. Jeff Bennett here. Do something a little interesting tonight. As many of you know, we've been doing an intense number of rebroadcasts of old programs for the last number of months. I'm not going to get into the reasons for it. Most of you are aware of it. I think we've got part two of a music program that we ran last Friday. We're going to do it tomorrow night. And on Monday and the following Monday, we will be running the conclusion of our six-part series, Dawn of the Dead. I think I've only been on live once this week. I am live with you at this very moment. It's been tough. It's been some physical drawbacks. I'm tired out. I'm worn out. We've got two of our major computers in the offices and in the home that are out being merged, and one of them is getting replaced with a new one. And I got a great call this afternoon letting me know that the work is now done. It's strictly a matter of their guy being able to come deliver, get them all set back up again. I could go get them, but frankly, don't want to drive. Driving is very difficult for me right now. Trying to work on a program for today, I came across something that theoretically is health-related. Recorded this probably 7 years ago. I'd gone back to New York to be with Brother Ray. Some other things happened on that trip that were an awakening for me. There's not a need for me to play the second portion of it because it was a two-hour program. But tonight I'm going to play part one of you of The Awakening. Part of it is health-related, as relates to one of my granddaughters. You need to hear these stories, because if you're not aware of them, you're setting yourself, your family, your daughters, your granddaughters up for a poisoning, potentially a murder. So I want you to listen carefully to this. And I will be back with you on Tuesday. And hopefully we'll remain with you live from that point on. So bear with us, stay with us, and I'll see you when I see you. Enjoy this program. It's pretty profound.
Nobody has. I got you and all that jazz. Here we go. I'm in love with you, pretty baby, and all that jazz. You are my dream come true. All that jazz. Baby, you are really too much. You got the skin that I love to touch. The skin I love to touch too much. And all that jazz. You have got the lips that suit my taste. And your fingertips, they cannot be replaced. Oh, baby, what you got, nobody has. And I got you, yes, I got you. I got you and all that jazz.
Mm-hmm. the mid-1970s, owned a home in Lincolnwood, Illinois. I guess I was in my early to mid-20s. Our next-door neighbors, Florence and Cy Black, were in their late 60s. We spent many evenings well into the night having dinner with them. Most nights it was at their place. We all kind of shared in the foods that we brought, etc. Florence loved to cook. And we would play canasta till 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Cy had to get up and go to his plant. I had to get up and go to my work. My wife had to go to her work. And we drank. And I think 3 of us smoked. 1 did not. Of course, those were different times. Nobody cared that much about secondhand smoke, etc. It was just something that people did. We would play other games, but canasta was one. Because once you got going with that game, it went for 3 complete sets before you reached the denouement, the ultimate conclusion. The more Florence drank, the looser her tongue became. Now, never to the point of vulgarity, she made a statement once that if you don't use it, you lose it. Now, we all knew what Florence was talking about. They had a daughter, Pat, that was kind of a strange bird. That could be said about many things. Good evening. Welcome to, I guess, my return to the airwaves. Jeff Bennett here, life, liberty, and your good health for an unusual Wednesday night offering. But it will not be that unusual as I lean more and more to bringing you this kind of what I hope is thought-provoking programming. More importantly, what is designed to bring answers to you about a wide range of things, maybe even to the point that it affects your own personal mental or physical well-being. You don't use it, you lose it. I've been off the air for over 2 weeks. In some respects, I like to believe I've been off the air for considerably longer than that. I haven't had it in me. I haven't felt it. Not for a long time. Oh, I come here, I do what has to be done. But then we were expected to close down for 2 weeks for renovation of the network, most of which has been completed. And then I had my trip. The trip was, to say the least, a real eye-opener. I learned things about myself. One of them we'll talk about in a few moments. And we'll continue to revisit it throughout the program. There's a good reason for it. Why I'm going to share with you some of the stories I'll share with you today, in addition to other commentary. And it seems that so much of what we touch upon is because something, somewhere, somehow in our everyday life has affected us. Maybe directly, some cases indirectly. While I was gone, my 11-year-old has been having some physical issues. Now, in her case, and many of you are familiar with some of the stories, her physical issues, I believe, firmly stem from much of the emotional that she's going through right now. But it was time for her to go in for a physical. And her doctor determined that she was lacking in particular areas of vaccination. You know, my daughter knows how I feel about most of this. But one particular area made me livid. Two areas in particular. First of all, the nurse, who is an overbearing, ugly human being. Now, I don't even know what she looks like. But I can base this upon her attitude toward my 11-year-old granddaughter, who's a very slight child. Because she is as skinny and light of build as she looks to be taller than she is. And she is my little buddy. She's my pretty girl. They both are. All three of them are. But I have a special affinity for this young child. When I got back, she was over here today. She's been out of school for some days. Her cough is horrible. Absolutely horrible. She's coughing in the background right now. It's clearing up a little bit. Some of this could be attributed to change in weather. Now, when I left here a week ago this past Monday or Tuesday, the day before, the 26th of October, it was 93 degrees outside here in Arizona, the Phoenix area, and I went swimming that day. While in New York, I found it on some occasions to be uncomfortably warm, unseasonably warm, as it were, and I put shorts on. And I went to the mall, and I went to the various different places that Brother Ray and I went to, including an unbelievable story, which we'll also find a way to incorporate into this program, because it all has a bearing on where I'm going to take you in this program. So the doctor decides that my granddaughter needs three vaccinations, two of them, I don't know what, whatever the normal nonsense is that schools require to go in there, which she'd be just as well not going in there. I can do a better job teaching this child than those idiots can. No, I can't call them idiots. That takes me back to where I was before I left. They're not idiots. In some respects, they're fools. They are themselves uneducated, having been the subject of several generations of indoctrination as opposed to education. Apparently, the nurse who was going to administer the vaccinations was a very rough individual. Was very physically forceful with my granddaughter. That's number one reason why the doctor is going to hear from me. In very professional but very firm, no-nonsense fashion. But the third vaccination absolutely grinds the daylights out of me. I am aware of no law that requires it. I could be wrong, and I will do my just research this evening. Gave her a vaccination of a product called Gardasil. And without getting into a whole lengthy story about Gardasil, it is a vaccine that is being given to young girls who might become promiscuous. It is an HPV or injection that could prevent cervical cancer in the years to come. Dr. Diane Harper was a leading expert responsible for the Phase 2 and Phase 3 safety and effectiveness studies, which secured the approval of the human papillomavirus or HPV vaccines, Gardasil, and Cervarix. Dr. Harper also authored many of the published scholarly papers about the vaccines. She is now the latest in a long string of experts who are pressing the red alert button on the devastating consequences and irrelevancy of said vaccines. Harper made her confession at the 4th International Conference on Vaccination, which took place in Reston, Virginia. Her speech was originally intended to promote the benefits of the vaccines. It took a 180-degree turn when she chose instead to clean her conscience about the deadly vaccines so that she could sleep at night. Harper explained in her presentation that the cervical cancer risk in the U.S. is already extremely low and that vaccinations are unlikely to have any effect upon the rate of cervical cancer in the United States. In fact, 70% of all HPV infections resolve themselves without treatment within a year. And the number rises to well over 90% in 2 years. Well, Harper also mentioned the safety angle, that all trials of the vaccines were done on children age 15 and above, despite them currently being marketed for 9-year-olds. So far, 15,037 girls have reported adverse side effects from Gardasil alone to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, or VAERS. And that number only reflects parents who underwent the hurdles required for reporting adverse reactions. Now, at the time of the writing, 44 girls were officially known to have died from said vaccines. The reported side effects include Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is paralysis lasting for years or permanently, sometimes eventually causing suffocation. Other side effects: lupus, seizures, blood clots, brain inflammation. Parents are usually not made aware of said risks. Dr. Harper, the vaccine developer, claimed that she was speaking out so that she might finally be able to sleep at night. She said about 8 in every 10 women who have been sexually active will have HPV at some stage of their lives. Normally, there are no symptoms, and in 98% of the cases, it clears themselves. But in those cases where it doesn't and is not treated, it can lead to precancerous cells, which may develop into cervical cancer. And although these two vaccines are marketed as protection against cervical cancer, this claim is purely hypothetical. Studies have proven there is no demonstrated relationship between the condition being vaccinated for and the rare cancers that the vaccine might prevent. But it is marketed to do that nonetheless. In fact, there is no actual evidence that the vaccine can prevent any cancer. And from the manufacturer's own admissions, the vaccine only works on 4 strains out of 40 for a specific venereal disease that dies on its own in a relatively short period of time anyway. So the chance of it actually helping an individual is about the same as the chance of her being struck by a meteorite. Now, since coming forward with the truth about the devastating consequences of the HPV vaccine, Harper has been a victim of a relentless campaign attempting to discredit the validity of her claims. She was even misquoted by the British tabloid, the Sunday Express, which printed a false story loaded with fabricated quotations attributed to her. In an interview with The Guardian, Harper made it very clear about what exactly she said in order to protect herself from potential lawsuits. In an interview with CBS News, Harper clarified her position, once again made it crystal clear just how devastating the vaccine can be. She said, "If we vaccinate 11-year-olds and their protection does not last, we have put them at harm from side effects, small but real, for no benefit. The benefit to public health is nothing. There is no reduction in cervical cancers. They're just postponed unless the protection lasts for at least 15 years and over 70% of all sexually active females of all ages are vaccinated." She also says that Enough serious side effects have been reported after Gardasil use that the vaccine could prove riskier than the cancer it purports to prevent. Cervical cancer is usually entirely curable when detected early through normal pap screenings, pap smears. The risks of serious adverse effects events, including death reported after Gardasil use in the JAMA article, that's Journal of the American Medical whatever, by Dr. Barbara Slade, were 3.4 of 100,000 doses distributed. The rate of serious adverse effects on par with the death rate of cervical cancer. Gardasil has been associated with at least as many serious adverse events as there are deaths from cervical cancer developing each year. Indeed, the risks of vaccination are underreported in Slade's commentary, as they are based on a denominator of doses distributed from Merck's warehouse. Up to one-third of those doses may be in refrigerators waiting to be dispensed as the autumn onslaught of vaccine messages sent home to parents the first day of school. And should the denominator in Dr. Slade's work be adjusted to account for this, then divided by three for the number of women who would receive all three doses, the incidence rate of serious adverse events increases up to fivefold. How does a parent value that information? Parents and women must know that deaths occurred. Not all deaths have been reported were represented in Slade's work. One-third of the deaths reported were unavailable to the CDC, leaving the parents of the deceased teenagers in despair. And the CDC is ignoring the very rare but real occurrences that need not have happened if parents were given information stating that there are real but small risks of death surrounding the administration of Gardasil. She also worries that Merck's aggressive marketing of the vaccine may have given women a false sense of security, the future expectations women hold because they have received free doses of Gardasil, purchased by philanthropic foundations, by public health agencies, or covered by insurance, is the true threat to cervical cancer in the future. Should women stop pap screening after vaccination? The cervical cancer rate will actually increase per year. Should women believe this is preventative for all cancers? Something never stated but often inferred by many in the population. A reduction in all health care would compound our current health crises. Should Gardasil not be effective for more than 15 years, the most costly public health experiment in cancer control will have failed miserably. Harper noted that her concern for the vaccine's deadly side effects applies only to women in the Western world. Of course, in developing countries where there is no safety pap screening for women repeatedly over their lifetimes, the risks of serious adverse events may be acceptable, as the incidence rate of cervical cancer is 5 to 12 times higher than in this country, and it dwarfs the risk of death reported after Gardasil. And the National Vaccine Information Center has confirmed that two virologists, Stephen Kraling and Joanne Luchowski, have filed a lawsuit against their former employer and vaccine manufacturer Merck. The NBIC writes, quote, "The lawsuit alleges that Merck defrauded the U.S. for over 10 years by overstating the MMR vaccine's effectiveness. The virologists claim in their lawsuit that they, quote, witnessed firsthand the improper testing and data falsification in which Merck engaged to artificially inflate the vaccine's efficacy findings." You see, my friends, what we're learning here is, once again, all for the case of the almighty buck. The profiteers roll on, and murder continues. NBIC President co-founder Barbara Lowe Fisher warns of the disturbingly cozy relationship and overwhelming conflict of interest between federal agencies charged with vaccine safety oversight, such as the CDC, and vaccine manufacturers. Merck's global vaccine sales total more than $20 billion a year. Do you honestly think they're willing to give that up? You see, as the world's pharmaceutical giants continue to be driven less by moral accountability and more by profit and shareholder-driven bottom lines, we are going to see more and more products such as this vaccine, which are marketed as essential to one's survival. And while some vaccines are indeed essential, such as vaccines for polio and measles, the HPV vaccine is a new beast entirely. That, my friends, is unbelievably shocking. Not? And so, because of the information I've just shared with you, and because of the relative obesity, or maybe in this case it's bestiality, of the nurse who administered by poking and jabbing and prodding my granddaughter, this doctor is going to be receiving an exceedingly harsh letter from me. Now, it will be signed broadcast journalist. Maybe they'll pay attention. And so that's one story that affected me. Now let's see if I have time to tell you another story. The time was about a year ago. I was at that time living in my son's house, partway through the restoration process. As some of you are aware, I recently paid homage to my what would have been my 18th moon living in that marvelous place. One night late, and I'm going to suspect it wasn't even nearly a year ago, I believe it was probably earlier this year, in 2015. I walked into Denny's one night late, as I usually do. This particular case would have been, I believe, a Wednesday night. And I say that because I may go tonight. Lord knows how tired I am, but I can't be tired when I am searching for something. But that's something that I was searching for, that I did not even know I was searching for, found me on that particular night. I walked in. For some reason, I guess I was in a little bit of pain. I moved slowly. I remember, I can almost tell you what I was wearing that night. And I must have walked in holding the area just to the left of where I'd had my hernia surgery last year. Maybe my face was twisted up a little bit of pain, discomfort. I wouldn't have called it pain, but a degree of discomfort, most definitely. And I went and sat down and ordered my coffee. I couldn't tell you who was serving me that night. Might have been Dez. I don't think so. I think it was Dulce. Don't think it was Raven. Rarely has Raven served me. Could have been Tatiana, who also occasionally cuts my hair. Now, don't make anything out of that, please. I teased her one day sitting in the barber chair that she served me dinner and cut my hair, and the next thing I'd have to stay overnight and serve her breakfast, but that was a joke, merely a joke. We don't go there. It brought some good laughs from her fellow. A woman walked up to me shortly after I sat down. She didn't sit down. She leaned over at my table and said, "Sir, are you all right?" I must have looked at her a little strangely, and I said, I guess so. Why do you ask?" She said, "You don't look all right. You look like you're in pain." I said, "Well, I have a little discomfort tonight. I've been working on a restoration project over here in a home, and I may have overdone it tonight. May I sit down?" she asked. My friends, I can sit here and tell you this story 20 years from today. That is what a profound impact that evening had. And so I invited her to sit. And she explained to me who she was. She was the wife of a minister, a pastor. Now, I've never made any bones about it over the years. I gave up on religiosity and churchology many, many years ago. Or churchosity. It's not that I didn't have a curiosity, but those two things just have not been a part of my life for a long, long time. I've seen too many false prophets standing at the pulpit. We've seen them on television. We've heard them on the radio. We've seen them at so many different functions over the years. But she explained to me who she was anyway. When we return from our break, I'm going to continue this story because it has a profound impact on the story I'm going to share with you later during this program this evening. Thank you for being with me on Life, Liberty, and Your Good Health. Or maybe tonight it's my good health. Stay with us. We'll find out.
Take me down to Duke's Place. Wildest box in town is Duke's Place. Love that piano sound in Duke's Place. Saxes do their tricks in Duke's Place. Fellas swing their chicks in Duke's Place.
Period back in time will have a more profound meaning to me for the rest of my life than any piece of music I think I've ever heard. When I sat down and the pastor's wife approached me about the fact that I was not looking like I was feeling well, I invited her to sit. She and her husband and some people were sitting at a table, several tables behind me. They were back in the back part of the restaurant before it was remodeled. And I can't tell you where the conversation began, other than she shared with me where their church was. And she was quite surprised when I explained to her that I knew exactly where the church was. And we kind of moved on from there, and we talked a bit. And she invited her husband over to sit, and I, of course, invited him. This conversation must have gone on for 30, 40 minutes. Pain? Yes. Suffering, of course. much of which the stories of I've shared with you over the last year or so on this program. Much pain and suffering in our family. What my daughter's gone through. What the family as a whole continues to go through. I explained to the pastor and his wife that I was more than aware of where their church was, that I live but seven houses away from it. Now, this is a church that was built literally in the neighborhood. Oh, no, it's not stained glass windows, although there is one that faces the east to catch the morning sun rays. But other than that, it's a relatively nondescript-looking building. It doesn't have steeples all over the place. And in other words, it's not a monument to man's idea of what they should be building for God. The monument is what goes on behind those walls, as it should be. Now, I've shared with you, I've not been a huge member of religiosity or churchology for a long time. And there were two things that brought me to that. One was an evening in Vietnam where my good friend Christopher Lucci, who had returned from R&R with his wife in Hawaii. And Chris's favorite food was fried chicken. I was not cooking that night, and I'm thankful because I may have held a guilt complex for many years if I had been. Or maybe I held that guilt complex because I had not been cooking that night. Christopher returned and choked on a chicken bone that had lodged in his throat and died. Not from the kind of activity that one would have experienced as a helicopter pilot flying us around Vietnam, picking up wounded and getting them to medical care. He died choking on a damn chicken bone. And that next morning, I walked up on a hill by myself. Maybe a target. But it didn't matter to me because I never had thoughts of dying at the time I spent in Vietnam. I never had thoughts or fears of being killed. I don't know why. It was, to me, another adventure in life. And yet I walked up on that hill and I sat and I prayed. Just being him. And expressed my frustrations. My feelings over the loss of Chris. He was a warrant officer. He was a pilot. I was a E4 and E5 specialist, as it were. I could never attain the rank of sergeant, even though I had the same classification as an E5, because I was working outside of my trained MOS. For those of you who may have served in the military, you'll understand that language. And that night I sat down and wrote a very lengthy letter to his wife, who I'd never met, never spoken with. And she never responded to it, and I never received an answer. But I did this because I was driven to do so. The next time in my life that I walked away from, but you see, that was my spirituality side that dealt with the loss of Chris that day. The next time was some months after I was out of the service, and I lived in an apartment in Rogers Park, Illinois, overlooking Lake Michigan and the beaches. Two blocks away was a three-story building, a long, long, long brownstone that was originally built as an apartment complex. It was completely filled by Hare Krishnas. Gentle, interesting people. Maybe it was a cult to some degree that would come out on the beaches and offer people veggie stew. Never had any altercations. They were very pleasant people to talk with. But that was not my next go-around with religiosity. No, that came some months later. After I was living in the apartment, I received a letter from the church that I'd been raised in and baptized in and went to confirmation classes, etc., the Village Church of Northbrook, Illinois. And something within me tells me that I've told this story to someone recently, and I don't remember why or to whom or under what circumstances, or maybe yes, I do. that's not important. The letter stated to me that due to the fact that I had contributed neither time nor money to the benefit of the congregation, that I was being dropped from the membership rolls of the church. Where were they when I was serving in Germany, other than the fact that I sought them out because my retiring minister, Harry P. Lundell, was going on a European trip, including to the Holy Land, as a retirement gift from the church? Where was the village church, the Presbyterian so-called Christian church, when I was sitting there running around the country in Vietnam for 21 months? They were never there. There were no letters, no concerns for my welfare or anything else. It's fine. That didn't bother me. When I was over there doing a job, I concentrated on that job, not who was running around with my girlfriend back home or my wife, which I did not have anyway. I separated myself from almost all things, all people that I knew, to concentrate on what I had to do. I smoked maybe 3 joints in 21 months and never liked them. I've smoked 2 since. Still didn't like them. Interesting enough, both those joints that I smoked were with Brother Ray, who I just left in New York City some 22 odd hours ago. Both of us realizing that we've known each other so damn long that so many people that we knew and grew up with are long ago deceased, and that it is he and I that stand alone. He, the liberal New Yorker, and I, the so-called conservative from somewhere in the Middle West of this country. Religiosity, the bane on our society in so many respects. I explained to the pastor and his wife how I came to know of the location of their church, because I did pass that church numerous times every single day. And when there were services going on, I would stop in front of the church and I would look in the window. And they had windows. They weren't 4 walls blocking the world outside. There were glass windows inviting the world to come inside. And that is what I found so fascinating. That is why I always found an interest in maybe going to that church, just to see, just to feel. But there was one thing that held me back. It was in a neighborhood, and it was obvious that the members that were inside those glass walls, which allowed a two-way vision, that church was 100% Hispanic. I did not speak their language. And I expressed this to the pastor. And he laughed. And I said, "What's so funny?" He said, "Many of our parishioners, our congregation, speak no English at all. And they have no desire to learn." And he said, "It's so sad because I only preach to them in English. If they're going to come here, they need to learn the language of this new native country that they've adapted. And for those who maybe are elderly, or those who have recently arrived, legally or otherwise, and I'm sure in that neighborhood most of it was illegally," he said, "my wife translates to them." And then I shared with them some of the story I've just shared with you about my conversation with the Almighty in Vietnam over the loss of Chris. And I shared with them the story of my church with their letter of kissing me off. Because even back then in 1970-something, I realized if this is what churchiology is all about, if this is what religiosity is all about, what can you do for us Not what you can do for God, but if what you can do for us, if you can't do it, then we have no need for you. I knew at that moment something was God-awful. Something was wrong with churchianity. And so I walked from the church and have rarely attended since. There was a point in my life that I was at a low. A business that I was part owner of that I had poured my heart and my soul and every waking moment into. Maybe sometimes to the extent of ignoring my children when they were young, but I was always there for them. I would be there for functions. I would participate in their lives in so many respects. But there was still a degree of suffering that took place because of the unbelievable hours that I worked, because that's what my chemical makeup is, my psychological makeup. If that's what religiosity and churchianity are all about, then I want no part of it. But there was a time some years later when I was at that low. And I attended an American Baptist church that was, I was quite familiar with, only because they used to hold their services in the Holiday Inn next door to a company I worked at. My manager happened to be a member of that church, and he and his wife became exceptionally close friends anyway for many, many reasons. They're both deceased now, and I miss them dearly. Leith never did know the impact and the influence he had upon me, even though I was not down there on my skinny knees lining the collection plate every Sunday. And it was a point in time I broke down pretty damn hard in that church. And I recovered. But what happened this night at Denny's earlier this year was an awakening, because I began to very freely talk about some of the things that my family was going through. This radical estrangement that I have from my family. And words like hurt and anger were used and discussed. And yes, I was invited to attend their church, something I found so comfortable with these people. And I'm not one to run to a church. I think you understand that by now. And yet there was an interesting revelation made to me that night that struck me hard. There is a huge void in my life. And that void was causing me physical as well as emotional pain. They didn't sit there and purport to pass judgment upon me and to tell me what my void was. They challenged me to determine what that void was, although they made several inferences. We discussed a little bit about my philosophies of the church in this country. We discussed the 501c3 nonsense that prevents these people from, in effect, preaching the word, the whole word, and nothing but the word. And I vowed that I would attend that church, and you realize that after all these months, I have yet to set foot in that church. And yet I still drive by it. Reasonably often. And I regret that I had not stepped into that church. And it bothers me that I had not stepped into that church. Because I made a commitment to myself. I made a commitment to him that I wanted to set foot into that church. And I have not kept my own word. What has all this got to do with health, Bennett? You're going to learn more in the second hour tonight. Because there's a second chapter to this story. Also, it's Wednesday. And I have to pull it out from under my desk pad, but I believe that there are services being held at that church tonight, about an hour after I get off the air. If I can get off the air in time and clean up, put something a little bit warmer on than I currently have on, I'm home and I have shorts on again, and I found it actually warmer in New York City than it was here. I was in Nyack, New York yesterday, and I had shorts on and a shirt, and I was comfortable as all hell get out. There was one day it was cold and chilly, and I needed to wear a warmer coat. For other days, it was just, shall we say, warmer. But there's a lot more to this story. A second. I'm not going to call it warning, because it wasn't a warning. It was a revelation. It has to do with health. My friends, I believe it has so much to do with health. It's sickening. Mental being, physical well-being, spiritual well-being. All of these things have to do with our optimum physical health, do they not? And so, maybe to some degree, I'm sitting on a pulpit this evening. Maybe I'm preaching to the choir. Maybe I'm reaching out to someone who's never tuned into this program before. Maybe I'm able to... Oh, my God. Reach out to you with something that I never, ever thought I would say about myself. A new empowerment, maybe? Because that's how I feel. I hope I can keep it. But it takes work. It's not a matter of just coming home and saying, okay, everything's different. This is cool. But I now know how I need to deal with the problems within my own family. No, I'm not going to be waving a Bible in front of them and beating on it and thumping the Bible, etc., etc. That's the wrong way to get about things in this family. The revelations I was given beginning a week ago today, that was placed before me, has had such a profound impact on my life in 1 week. That I don't ever want to go back. I spent the most amazing week of my life back east. Amazing for so many reasons. Yes, the revelation. But even that one meeting was not the end of my story, but we're not going to share all of it with you today. Because I'm still learning. I'm still evolving from it all. Many of you have heard my tales of my life with Brother Ray over the years and how volatile it can be. He's very loudmouthed, brash German, who most people would take as an Italian. Horribly volatile relationship with his wife, but there's times it's almost childlike. He likes to tell you how much she relies upon him. Well, in some respects, she does. But what he will never admit is how much he relies upon her. And given what Raymond and I went through for so many days in our time together, if it had been 1 week before, 1 week, we would have exploded at each other in the store. His home burned down or had a huge fire a week ago Monday, to the point his entire office and his structure is gone. The upper portion of the house is habitable. The lower floor is not. But if all of this would have happened, the stresses we went through trying to buy him a new computer, which took 3 days to accomplish, which may sound crazy to you, we would have been screaming at each other in the store, fighting out in the parking lot, and I probably would have packed up and left. I would have gone elsewhere, maybe half hour, 45 minutes away, and just disappeared for the rest of my life. But that did not happen. And because of what I went through and what I've been led to, it made all the difference in the world. And I stepped in and put him aside from his problems, that which was exacerbating his frustration. And I brought it to a proper and just conclusion, which I'm still dealing with here back in Phoenix today. Stay with us. We're going to take five or so. We'll be back. We're going to continue this story. Hope you'll stick around.
Sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a four-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once-per-year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast two-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.